I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. Today, our series of conversations with the candidates continues with Craig Wolf, a lawyer who is the Republican nominee for Maryland Attorney General. He's opposing Brian Frosch in the November election, and Dr. Calvin Ball, the Democratic chairperson of the Howard County Council, who's running against Republican incumbent Alan Kittleman for Howard County Executive. Craig Wolf asserts that he will bring different priorities to the Maryland AG's office. If he does prevail in November, he'll be the first Republican elected as the state's top lawyer in 100 years. If Calvin Ball is elected Howard County Executive, he'll have to wrestle with an expensive and controversial flood plan for Ellicott City, school overcrowding, and competing interests of development and preservation. Our conversations with the candidates continue when Midday starts right after the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us today. Two more installments of our series of conversations with the candidates. On the second half of our show, my guest will be Dr. Calvin Ball. He's the Democratic candidate for Howard County Executive. But first, a conversation about the race for Maryland Attorney General with the Republican candidate for that office, Craig Wolf. In the 1990s, Mr. Wolf served as federal prosecutor in the Justice Department and as an assistant state's attorney and senior circuit prosecutor in Allegheny County. He also served as counsel to the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee. As a businessman for 10 years, he was the president and CEO of the Wine and Spirits Wholesalers of America, a position that he left last June. At the age of 40 in 2003, in the wake of the 9/11 attacks, Mr. Wolf enlisted in the Army. He was awarded the Meritorious Service Medal and the Bronze Star for his service during Operation Enduring Freedom. He currently serves as an international law officer with the Civil Affairs Brigade. That's a JAG attorney position. His opponent in the race is the incumbent Brian Frosch. Mr. Wolf is 55 years old. He lives in Howard County. He and his wife Sally have two children in their 20s. You are welcome to join our conversation with Craig Wolf. 410-662-8780 is our phone number here on Midday. Our email, midday@wypr.org. If you want to drop us a tweet, @MiddayWYPR. We are also streaming our conversation with Mr. Wolf, and we will as well stream the conversation with Calvin Ball on the WYPR Facebook page. Mr. Wolf, it's good to meet you. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate it.
So this is your first entry into politics. You're starting with statewide office. Why the Attorney General's office? Why do you want to be the state's lawyer?
Look, you know, I looked at the race last year, and what I found was what was going on in the office was appalling to me, that the Attorney General currently seems more focused on politics than he does on public safety. And when you've got problems in the state where, like, for instance, Baltimore is the murder capital of the country now, where you have over 2,000 opioid deaths a year, when we're fourth in the country in trafficking of women and children, and gang and gun violence is running rampant across the state, you need somebody to focus on those issues. I don't think it's a partisan thing, and he's made this office a partisan office.
And partisan, and because he is focusing, for example, on lawsuits against the Trump administration? Is that what you're pointing to in particular?
Absolutely, absolutely. He is spending all his time suing the administration instead of focusing on the problems here. That's why law enforcement, for the first time ever, is backing a Republican nominee for Attorney General. We have the support of the Maryland State Fraternal Order of Police, all 21,000 of their members, and I have the overwhelming majority of sheriffs and state's attorneys across the state, both Democrat and Republican. That's because he really hasn't been focused on that, and they know it.
You can't do both. I mean, the Attorney General's office would say that, you know, the legislature earmarked some money to allow him to pursue these lawsuits. He's not the only Attorney General in the country to do it. There are, by one count, you know, 26, 27 other Attorneys General pursuing lawsuits that they contend, as does Mr. Frosch, are in the best interests of the citizens of Maryland.
He just hasn't. And frankly, he's admitted he hasn't. He's been on video saying that he isn't doing the job he ran for. He actually says that on tape. He said, I'm not doing the job I ran for. I'm not doing the job I was elected to. And then he goes through the litany of lawsuits that he's filed. So it's nice to have your opponent concede your case. But the fact is that you can't do what he's doing and spending all that time and still run the office effectively. When he ran for office, there was no intention, and no prior Attorney General Mellon has ever done this. We've had Democrats, as you indicated early on, for many years now. There's only been one Attorney General, Republican Attorney General, and that was the 50s appointed by McKeldin. But really, really, it's been 100 years since somebody's elected. So we've had attorneys general that have been Democrats for a long, long time, but none have politicized the office in this way, and none have ever lost the support of law enforcement because of it. And that's telling as far as what's going on in his office.
Well, perhaps he might say that when it comes to, for example, the lawsuit that he's filed about the emoluments clause, that and that the court so far has upheld his contention that Maryland does have standing. In other words, they are allowed to pursue this because the fact that the Trump Hotel is in Washington, Mr. Frosch is trying to demonstrate that this affects businesses here in Maryland, other hotels, other resorts, other businesses. So this is in the best interest of citizens of our state to challenge Mr. Trump on those grounds.
Well, I think the judge would have did a far reach on the standing issues. Most people would go to Washington to visit things in Washington, stay at Washington hotels. I don't think it's very much an impact on Maryland hotels. But besides that, the fact is that if the Washington Attorney General, and who has in fact joined in this lawsuit, wants to go ahead and sue the president based upon a Washington hotel, that's fine. Maryland doesn't have an interest in who stays at a Washington hotel. What Maryland has an interest in is somebody who's fighting crime in the state and working on public safety issues with the law enforcement community and with the governor for that matter. He's not a good partner with the governor. That's why the governor's endorsed me as well.
Let me ask you one more question about these lawsuits against the Trump administration. Then we'll talk specifically about some proposals that you have regarding violent crime and opioids, et cetera. But there are an awful lot of voters, the overwhelming majority of voters here in the state of Maryland, who oppose Mr. Trump and who think Mr. Trump is, in fact, very much in need of being checked by not only Congress, but in whatever other way his policies and his behavior and his secretiveness about his business dealings and the fact that there is some evidence to say that he has been profiting as the president. They're more than happy to have Maryland be part of that national effort to pursue these questions that are, you know, basic constitutional issues that are important to Maryland voters.
I think you're overstating the case. I think there is a certain segment of the Democratic Party that's certainly on board for this. But look, you know, this shouldn't be a partisan issue, and he's making it partisan. The fact is that in Maryland, look, if you're a family in Baltimore and your kid gets killed on the streets, you don't care whether the attorney general is Democrat or Republican or he's suing the administration. You would prefer that he actually focused on the problems in the state. And the fact is that most Marylanders, and I've met many, many Democrats. My wife is a Democrat, and she supports me wholeheartedly after 24 years of marriage. That's a win in itself, I think. But I think, look, you know, it's something that you have to make choices about, and you have to understand what your priorities are. And so when he makes the choice to sue 25, 30 times, he's taking resources from the office that would be used for things like public safety, consumer protection, other environmental issues, and he's using those resources, that manpower, okay, in his office for those lawsuits. So he's draining our opportunities, our ability to do other things that we should be doing in the state.
It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. My guest today, Craig Wolfe. He's the Republican nominee for Maryland Attorney General. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org, to send us a tweet, @MiddayWYPR. And we are also streaming on the WYPR Facebook page. So what is the capacity of the Attorney General and that office to diminish or even eliminate violent crime in cities like Baltimore and across the state?
I think you have a tremendous opportunity here to work with the law enforcement community, work with the governor to solve these problems. For instance, you know, one of the things that I think we have to consider is working more closely with the federal government. You know, we unfortunately have a situation, and frankly engineered by my opponent, who changed the bail rules in this state. Now, we can all agree that low-level offenders shouldn't be sitting in jail pending trial. We got that. But instead of going through the legislature where he lost the opportunity to do that, he changed focus, did it as an attorney general, wrote an opinion, and then got the courts to change it behind closed doors. So now we have on the street is we have people who are being held who shouldn't be held, and a great number of violent repeat offenders who are on the streets on recognizance. I've seen record after record of felons in possession of weapons, rapists, murderers the other day. You saw they actually got out on bail. They should not be held to get out on bail. So we have all these problems. So what do you have to do? You have to work with the federal government. You have to take the most violent repeat offenders and push them to the federal system where the penalties are greater, where the parole is non-existent, and get them off the streets, get them away from the people who are trying to live and do their jobs and work every day and take care of their families. You also have to work with a local community with the federal government, meaning that you have to share intelligence. A lot of the problems we have today are not just within a county. Many years ago, of course, you could just say, we knew everybody in the county, the sheriff knew them, the state's attorney knew them. But now they're not only trans-county, they're trans-state, trans-national. So if you're not working closely with the federal government and sharing intelligence and working with them to bring these people to justice, you've got a real problem. One other thing on the other side of things, I think, you know, I talked about the division between the violent repeat offenders and those who need help at the lower level, especially the addicts. You know, I went to Washington County to visit the Day Reporting Center there, and it's a great program. Instead of housing people for 6 to 18 months, they send them to the Day Reporting Center. And so there's not additional costs because the costs that would have gone towards their imprisonment are now going towards the Day Reporting Center. What they do is they're on the streets, so they can work, obviously, but they have to report, they have to get tested for drugs, but they're given skills training, resume building, parenting classes, coping skills. And if they do well in the program, their sentences are cut, and then they can go back to their lives and hopefully be productive members, reintegrated in society. I like to see that replicated across the state. It's not like you want to put everybody in jail. You want to take the worst of the worst off the streets. You want to get them out. But you also want to help the people that are in need as well. And jail is really not the right alternative for those individuals.
Well, going back to cash bail, yeah. An awful lot of people say cash bail should simply be eliminated. It inordinately affects people of color. And they say that it's just, you know, an awful lot of people who are, you know, accused of nonviolent crimes and who are accused of low-level crimes. Many of those cases are dismissed, but they're not dismissed until they've sat in jail because they can't afford bail. I mean, it's a matter of people's capacity. There's a national movement to just totally eliminate cash bail. What do you think?
I think the people of Baltimore, frankly, and the rest of the state are more concerned with violent repeat offenders being put back out on the streets and harming their children and their families every day. Look, there is a place for bail reform. It's in the legislature. It's not done through fiat, through the courts, and
what
by the Attorney
General. What
should it
look like?
It should look in a way that you allow the bail system to operate, but you take into consideration the financial circumstance of the individual. But the fact is, by doing it the way he did it, and he claims this is his, by the way he did it, and he actually admits now that it's flawed. But by doing the way he did it now, we have places like Prince George's County, where there are 30, 40,000 warrants outstanding, and nobody's there to pick them up. So all these people were released on the streets, and now when they miss their trials, like the guy who stole a dump truck and ran over and killed an older gentleman about a month ago now, he was one of those individuals. He failed to appear, and nobody picked him up. The bail people are gone. They're gone from the state. So who then goes and gets them? This the sheriffs? Well, they're overwhelmed. So all these people are just running the streets. Think about this. If you're a police officer and you roll somebody up at 2 a.m. who's a felon in possession of a weapon and drugs, okay, that person nowadays is released before the paperwork's done the next day. Now, what does that do to the police department in terms of their willingness to take on crime in the state? And what does it do to the community when they see the same guy back the next day after he was arrested the night before being a felon in possession? The fact is that the effects on the street are much greater. And so we can work on bail reform, but it should be done through the legislature, not through fiat by the Attorney General and the courts.
And in terms of kicking so many of these cases up to the federal level, yeah. Isn't that abdicating the responsibility of Maryland law enforcement?
Absolutely not. It's working in partnership with our federal partners. And I'll give you an example. Years ago in Richmond, there was an operation called Project Exile. And what they did was they had such a problem with gun violence and murders in their street. It was one of the, Richmond at that time was one of the most dangerous cities in the country. So they took the violent gun offenders, they pushed them to the federal system where they had minimum mandatory sentences. And guess what? Crime went down. Violence went down. It was an effective program. I'd like to see something like that instituted in our state as well. And I think the U.S. Attorney has, and I have spoken about this, and I think he would agree that that's a good idea.
What about the opioid epidemic? You made mention of it earlier in our conversation. Again, the particular capacity, the particular role you see of the AG's office in fighting the opioid epidemic.
So obviously, I would like to push the legislature for more funding for those day reporting centers for those who are accused of crimes. But I think also you have to work with the governor. I think we need more funding. And you have to work with the federal government, too. I'll tell you, people look at me and they say, well, you're a Republican, you know, you must be partisan. You know, there was a press conference about a month ago where Senator Elizabeth Warren and Elijah Cummings, and I think it was Congressman Mathias.
And Lena Wen from the City Health
right.
Department.
They came out and said, look, we need need, this is a crisis. We need more funding, and the Republicans in Congress are not acting appropriately. I agree with them. I think we need more funding. We need people to get treatment, and we need not just a week treatment or a 30-day treatment. We have to have housing for months at a time sometimes for these people to get back on their feet. It is very difficult for these individuals to reintegrate unless they have that kind of rehabilitation process. And I was talking to an individual just 2 nights ago at a charitable function about that was founded based upon a woman whose son had died. And he used to run the drug treatment issues in Baltimore County. He had a 300-bed facility in Baltimore County. And people would go in there. It was very effective. It helped reduce people's recidivism rate. And yet that was shut down by the prior county executive. And so we need things like that across the state as well.
In terms of cooperation with the government, right, or the governor and the governor's office, for example, when it comes to opioid funding, there are those, including Dr. Wen, who thinks that the allocation of federal funds for opioid addiction have not been done in the most efficacious way. I mean, because I guess the governor's office decided that take this, I think it's about $22 million of federal funding for opioid abuse or opioid problem, and divide it evenly among all of the counties and jurisdictions around the state, where Baltimore has, considerably more, a considerably greater problem. So why not give more of the money, as much as a third of it, to the city? What do you think about that?
I can't speak to what the governor's done in the past, but I certainly believe, number one, it's a statewide problem. It is not just Baltimore City. Yes, it's greater in Baltimore City, but I'll tell you, Allegheny County and Cumberland, Maryland, they've got a real problem out there. It's a crossroads. It is a real problem. I've talked to the sheriff out there, the state's attorney. It is growing in problem out there. I've been in the Eastern Shore. Sure, it's all across the state. So the problem needs more money, and of course you should take into account where the problem is greatest. But I think we need more funding overall, and so when I would get into office, I certainly work with the governor to determine where the most sensitive areas were in terms of allocation.
What about gun regulation? Ben Jealous, the Democratic nominee for governor, thinks that although there is an assault ban law on the books here in Maryland, that it's full of loopholes and it needs to be strengthened. Are there any particular regulations concerning gun ownership that you would revise, change? What do you think?
No. My issue is not the gun issue per se, the gun possession issue per se. One thing I would note is that my opponent was very proud of the fact that he passed the gun law in 2013 that was very restrictive. Yet we haven't seen any effect of that legislation. So I'm skeptical of legislation just for the sake of legislation. If I thought something would be effective, I'd certainly look at it. But the fact is that gun crime and murders only got up in Baltimore City since that law. So that law has not been effective. So if you want to look at legislation, you better make sure it's effective before you put it into place. And so I haven't seen anything yet proposed that I think would actually make a difference.
When it comes to...
But I would say this. Certainly, gun offenders, those who are violent repeat offenders, they're using weapons, they need to put away for a long time. And that was certainly where I will focus.
Mandatory minimums, a big part of the governor's approach to violence reduction and safety. Mandatory minimums, on the other side, folks are saying, well, that takes away the prerogative from judges. It takes away the nuances or the understanding of nuances in individual cases. What do you think?
It does have that effect, and it's a balancing act, right? You don't want to have mandatory minimums for every crime, obviously. On the other hand, we've seen sentences in a lot of the jurisdictions have not been sufficient to take the people off the streets for a long enough period given their conduct, and the courts are clogged. So mandatory minimums are a helpful tool for the prosecutor and for the judges as well. And I think, look, it's important. My opponent, again, has always opposed mandatory minimum sentences. He opposed Jessica's law, which was designed to give mandatory minimum sentence to child sex offenders. And he tried to tie it up in legislature, and it was one of only two others, three total in the legislature, that tried to stop that bill. That's the kind of thing you need to have, where you have somebody who is that dangerous to the most vulnerable in society. Mandatory minimums are an easy solution for me.
And there is, what about the data? And there's plenty of it, and people have come on this show and talked about it, that says that they're just not effective. They don't work. They sound good. It sounds like folks are being tough on crime, but the actual reality of it is that it's not a deterrent and it doesn't work.
Well, it works if you use it, because it takes that offender off the street for a very long time. So, you know, there's different types of deterrence, as you know, Tom. There's specific deterrence and there's punishment, and then there's general deterrence. You know, I'm a big fan of specific deterrence, okay, and punishment. You know, when these individuals abuse a child, or, you know, rape a child, you know, I don't have any sympathy for bringing them back out on the streets, and I think they need to be put away for a long time. You're talking about the most vulnerable people that these people attack. And, you know, the people in Baltimore, they're tired of the crime on the streets. They're tired of it. You know, they're just trying to live their lives every day. When I go down to Baltimore City, and I do it a lot, I'm leaving here to talk to a number of people from Baltimore City, a number of pastors, what I hear from them is they need more police. They need more protection. Because I actually drove down to a fair with Bon Secours and the Tabernacle of the Lord Church and Ministries on this past weekend. And I saw a drug deal just driving right past two blocks away. This is the problem they're facing. They're trying to get their people to try to, you know, get themselves out of the cycle of drugs and violence. And I saw people down there who set up individual collectives where they're trying to teach skills like carpentry and welding. And I'm good friends with Squeaky Kirk, who has a rec center to keep the kids off the streets. People in Baltimore City like that are looking for help. They're looking for help, and they haven't seen it from the city government thus far, and I'm there to help them if I can do it.
Give me an example of how coordination between federal, state, and local law enforcement agencies can be improved, or how you would approach that particular challenge.
Well, obviously, I've talked about a couple of things. One is obviously, you know, you work with the state's attorneys, you work with the sheriffs to develop cases where the worst offenders get pushed to the federal system, okay, where you have those greater penalties. You also need to share the intelligence across state and federal lines. Again, these are transnational, trans-state actions, so you have to work on that as well. But I think you also have to work legislatively with them, and that's one thing my opponent hasn't done. You know, when he ran for attorney general 4 years ago, he went to the sheriffs, and Democrats and Republicans, they meet every month to ask him for his support, and ask them for his support. And 4 years ago, he had the support of law enforcement. And guess what? He hasn't been back to one meeting. You have to talk to the people involved to see what legislative fixes are necessary to improve things. So I would work closely with the state's attorneys and with the sheriffs, both Democrats and Republicans. I don't care about party. Okay, I'm a Republican running, but the attorney general should not be partisan, to find solutions legislatively and otherwise to deal with these issues.
What about gerrymandering? This is something that is certainly high on the list of priorities for Governor Hogan, were he to be reelected. This is something he's promised to put front and center in front of the legislature in January. There's a Supreme Court case recently decided, Maryland and Wisconsin, where the courts basically punted it. They said this is not a judicial matter. It should be a political matter. What do you think? Is it judicial or political?
It's both, depending upon how severe it was. I was actually at the Supreme Court argument, Tom, and it was funny because the Attorney General's office, which should have recused itself from the case given my opponent's involvement in the drawing of the prior map, but they came and they tried to argue that there wasn't gerrymandering in the state. And it's funny, but the justices on the left were the ones who criticized the most. Justice Kagan said, "What are you talking about? There's never been a better case of gerrymandering we've ever seen. In fact, there's no evidence to the contrary. And your former Governor O'Malley admitted it under oath." And yet they kept trying to argue that the facts weren't sufficient. And so, yes, we have a very gerrymandered state and it needs to change. And I think what gerrymandering does, it disenfranchises voters in the state. And people are tired of that. And it's not just Maryland, obviously, where the Democrats do it. It's in other states where the Republicans do it. You should have a fair map and a fair map drawn. I think Governor Hogan is looking at doing just that.
And he's suggesting that that Maryland should act, for lack of a better term, unilaterally. In other words, act on its own. What would an ideal gerrymandering antidote be? I mean, is it a judicial commission? How would it work in your view?
Well, I'm going to leave that up to the governor and obviously to the relevant Department of Planning to deal with those issues. But I would certainly be involved in it. Certainly, I think if he tries to do what I think he wants to do, which is to take away the multi-member districts. And what that does, when you have a multi-member district, what you do is you put, let's say, a three-member delegates, okay, three delegates in a district, and you take an urban area, and then you take it and you expand it out to a very rural area. So you disenfranchise the rural people, essentially, because only the urban voters have a voice in that district. And so by doing single-member districts, you're able to divide the pie a little better so people's voices are heard, so that a bunch of farmers aren't roped in with a bunch of urban officials, and you have different considerations there. So I think it's important that you change that. You have single-member districts, and I also think that goes both at the congressional and the local level in terms of redistricting. You know, it's clearly that this map was drawn to gerrymander the state, and we needed the governor to change that.
Just got a minute left. You mentioned, of course, you're a Republican. What does that mean in this day and age when Donald Trump is the head of the Republican Party?
Well, look, I was actually a Rubio guy back in the 2016 election. But look, I think it's important that you work with the federal government where you can and you oppose them where you should. I don't look at labels like that. I've been Republican my whole life, okay? But I don't think the attorney general should be partisan. You have to run in, as a party to get into office, and that's the nature of our system. But once you're in office, you should not be a partisan. When my opponent was a legislator from Montgomery County, as a delegate and a senator, if he wanted to be partisan to represent that constituency, that was fine. But when you become attorney general, you got to cast aside the partisanship, as the governor has done, and work across party lines to find good common sense solutions for everybody.
Craig Wolf is the Republican nominee for Maryland Attorney General. He's running against the incumbent Democrat Brian Frosch, and we've got a link to Mr. Wolf's campaign website at WIPR.org/midday. Mr. Wolf, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you, sir.
Tom. I appreciate your time.
Our conversations with the candidates continue after a quick break with Dr. Calvin Ball. He's running for Howard County Executive. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.